SiriusXM Sports presents
At the Races with Steve Bick.
Horse racing, handicapping,
interviews.
This is At the Races with Steve Bick.
The Wood Memorial and the Bluegrass. They're all going to shape up well. We know quite a bit, obviously, already about that Bluegrass. Actually, we've got pretty much what we expect for the Wood Field. It was exchanging some missives with Dave Grenning the last couple of days, actually, as I was traveling, and the Wood. Dave and I might not see eye to eye. I thought it was okay. Dave was like, "Meh, it's all right." I thought it was shaping up well. And then yesterday, some of the horses that came up, including Stronghold, the conversation with Tom Knust and Antonio Freisu aboard the D'Amato Charge. We'll see what Baffert, what he decides, who he's going to run, and the field will know more. We'll know more next week. Meanwhile, we've got plenty to do today, and that includes the classic Wednesday conversations. Dick Powell will join us in just a little bit, and in about 10 minutes or so, we'll talk about that Hong Kong Derby result from the weekend. And there are, 7 minutes to the sixth at Happy Valley, and I've got to put up the Dick's pick three, and in fact, I guess I'll have to do that on the fly. I actually was on the phone a little earlier with Eric Hamelbeck, and I didn't know if a trip to Iowa. sometimes I get a little corny. It won't be cornier than Iowa in July. the HPPA convention, which is going to be basically hosted by Prairie Meadows. I brought that up the other day with Stu Slagle, and I think there's an increasing likelihood that we will make our first trip to Prairie Meadows, and not the first trip to Iowa. I tromped Iowa okay when I was based in Kansas City for Proctor. Used to go up to Ames, to Iowa State, and got to Des Moines a handful of times. So, I think based on what Eric just laid out, and it doesn't conflict. It comes after Haskell. It will be at Monmouth Haskell Week, which is July 20th. So, it's the week after. So, it might be part of the summer travels. And, of course, that'll also include Virginia, Colonial. And I think we're going to go see our first plate. I would like to have gotten to see a Queen's plate. I'm embarrassed that I never saw a Queen's plate, but the King's plate this summer, too. So that's the week after. That's the week after Million weekend at Colonial. So, yeah, it's shaping up. I thought that once we got finished with the Preakness, that we'd, it was going to be a fairly, quiet summer, other than the ones that we always do. But it looks like there's actually a couple of extra trips that'll take us away from Saratoga. So anyway, Dick Powell in just a couple of minutes. And if you're not on Twitter, it just occurs to me I should be doing this more often. The 7th, 8th, and 9th at Happy Valley, Dick's pick 3, 6, 7, with 2, 10, 12, with 3, 4, 11. All right, 2 by 3 by 3. 6, 7, with 2, 10, 12, with 3, 4, 11. There's your play. We got a few. The Wednesday activities, obviously, is Seth later, and we're going to certainly recap the action at Turfway from Caitlin Free's perspective. We'll talk to Caitlin later. And also in hour three, Rich Migliori. And it's too bad. Rich was in a rut and he was driving yesterday, but he was listening. And so it would have been great to get him on with Tom Knust. But Richie today at 11 as well. Of course, Sid, Sire Watch Pedigree Focus. And, it's interesting, the topic that came up with Shane Wilson and, part of the recapping on Monday, right, from the, not just with Shane, but the, the weekend results, but the Philly winner of the Bourbonette I mentioned the story when I was doing the recap. Yeah, that was on Monday, right? When I was recapping the results before Mikey Diliberto came up. And it just so happens that Everland was the subject yesterday afternoon. Sid Fernando and Francis Caron's observations, their Substack columns, and they actually delved into Everland and hit that topic I talked about. The interconnectedness of those results Saturday at Turfway, from a pedigree standpoint, were almost bizarre, including, Mill Ridge and Oscar performance, the Ammermans. We came up a little bit yesterday with Michael McCarthy as well because of Oscar performance. But you got to read Francis's piece. I'll put a link. Yeah, I'll link it up. It's crazy how many. You fold in George Strawbridge and Jonathan Thomas, and it's a crazy confluence from Saturday of those winners at Turfway. It's kind of cool. So it's one of those. It sort of ties together all the elements of pedigree study and breeding that draws people, into the game from that perspective. I talk so often about all the fun things that are, that are part of, the game's appeal, and that actually is really on display in that Substack entry, right? So I'll let Sid riff on that, and I want to reach Bill Gallo. For those of you that saw the news, I got to catch up on a few other pieces of news from the last several days, and we'll do a couple of things. I asked Dick if he had read the Dan Ross piece. Dan wrote a as is often the case with him, California centric story, delving into the CAW groups, specifically Elite, and how their deals are structured, and very helpful. And anytime the curtain can be drawn back more on this topic, and we've been talking about it forever. Certainly, I was talking to Andy Serling about this, because Andy and Maury Wolf and everybody that appeared on that show in 2000 and I want to say six, the mutual interest special, is where this topic first came up. And it was in the shadow of Maury, warning the industry a few years before that, 2000, about the computer groups and, the potential problem that they, with their growth, with their proliferation, could potentially affect on the game. And so we've been talking about it for 15 years. And The topic of effective takeout, I guess that's been co-opted, but anybody that's listened to Andy Serling, Andy Serling is who first explained effective takeout, meaning the influence on pricing, on, tote prices as influenced by the groups and their ability to spread, specifically exacta wagering, to bring everything in line, and their system finding overlays, essentially values that are that were disproportionate, and then they send in, their system sends in the appropriate bet, so that on average their ability to cash keeps them. For years the idea was that they needed to come as close to break even as possible because their rebate would then create a profit, make the work worthwhile. Well, you can argue their access to the tote and all that, and the unfairness or all those elements. But for people like you and me, for most of us that, that are, more recreational bettors or even, the very serious bettors who, operate manually, it has sapped the value out of the pools that, we operate in and we like. I mean, I started, my play was exacta driven for a long time before, kind of turning toward the multi-race wagering. But the term effective takeout, meaning, the added burden that, that the groups, the sapping of the value, Andy created that and nobody else. And he's been talking about it for close to 10 years and coined that term. So I know Dick, read the piece from Dan Ross, and so I wanted to get his thoughts because obviously, Dick's long association with, premium bettors, he understands it as well or better than anybody. So I want to get his take on that. I started to mention Bill Gallo, and if you didn't see the news, NYRA, working with the National Steeplechase, are adding a grade one race for the Belmont Saratoga meet, and absolutely wonderfully identifying Peggy Steinman. It's so nice. I mean, this is very similar to when Hammer, when Hammer created the Eddie D. Honor these people while they're right. Honor these people while they can appreciate it and enjoy it. So I want to get Bill's. I do want to get Bill on. And of course, the season got started at Aiken. So I want to get some recap too. So looking to get Bill Gallo in here this morning. Right now, though, I think Dick Powell is standing by. Dick, good morning. Or he will be. Let me know when. I think maybe now we have Dick. No? Yes, Brian? Let me know. All right. Dick Powell? No? All right. No. You have him, but he's not patching through, in other words. No? All right. Well, then we'll access. All right. Oh, there we go. Dick?
Steve, I could barely hear you.
All right. Hang up then, and I'll get you separately. All right.
All right. Yep.
Very good. All right, we'll get Dick. Yeah, close that channel, if you would. The tech side of this annoys me to no end. Well, it was still worth trying. All right, no problem. There we go. All right. Sky starting to brighten up here at Clocker's Corner. See how quickly it could stand to warm up a skosh. There we go. Dick Powell, good morning.
Good morning, Steve.
All right. All right. Well, I don't know how much you heard, but I was riffing. We obviously will get to Hong Kong in a second, but I was talking about, you know, the CAW and that piece by Dan Ross, using, you know, California as the template for the, you know, the kinds of deals, and you've seen how this whole system has evolved and you know, it, I don't want to say infiltrated, but proliferated. How about that?
Yeah, there's no doubt. And I thought he did a good job, especially with the inside baseball aspects of California, because there were real statistics available to him. And then the role that the horsemen play, in that case, the TOC. And Bill seemed to indicate they were not going to do any special deal for Elite 17 that they weren't doing for anybody else in the next contract. So that was newsy. But the question remains, why does it work in Hong Kong? Why does it work in Australia? I don't have the answer, but they're thriving pretty good.
Well, out of curiosity, Dick, I mean, do we know, I mean, obviously the Hong Kong pools are the biggest, you know, the biggest pools in the world. Is it a control element and capping their, you know, the percentage of, you know, of the total pool that they're allowed to be?
No, not that I know of. That they have very strict rules as to how you bet and what you bet and all that. But it's worked, and it's worked in Australia. And Australia has fixed odds. They have tote, and they have high volume players, computer players. So that I just throw out there when I hear some of the doom and gloom. It doesn't have to be all doom, maybe a little gloom. And it was just interesting reading all the details and what goes into it. Now, if you're a big better, whatever, and you say, if you do this for me, I'll do that for you. In other words, I'll bet an enormous amount of money, which this guy obviously did, certainly did at Del Mar. How do you turn that down? And I know people are saying, well, we should do this and we should do that, but, you know, can racing afford, let's say it's a 10% drop in total handle, because some of these people have been restricted more or whatever. I don't know. I know we tend to go over the same thing, and I don't see any real movement to resolving issues that maybe could be resolved if everyone were told this is how we're going to do it, and if you want to bet this content, these are the rules. Not these individual things where someone is very aggressive can go out and negotiate and guarantee, because obviously the guy has a lot of leverage with the amount of money that he's putting in. So it was just interesting reading. I like reading stuff that I can learn, and I learned from reading. Bill's comments were on the mark, representing horsemen, making sure they get their share and that they signed off on this. So no one's doing anything that's going to violate the Interstate Horse Racing Act, where horsemen have veto power. Samick has out-of-state contracts. So that was comforting because, you know, some of these things you don't know.
The problem, one element of uncertainty, I guess you could call it. Even if you at this point, you know, did dial the groups back and limited their access or capped it, there's no guarantee that the players, the rank and file players that that have either dialed their own play back or walked away. How do you, you can't guarantee that any shortfall is going to be necessarily made up by, getting the players back that, that are disgusted by, the influence that the groups have wrought, essentially.
Right. So there's the real risk of resolution, that if you continue to do this, we know this is going to happen. But if you change it, try something else, you don't necessarily know what's going to happen. And you hear the same thing in sports betting. I mean, sports betting is pretty well dominated by sophisticated groups that go through the whole betting menu, not just the sides, but the totals, the props, the everything, and find weaknesses because unless a bookie is using a computerized program to set lines, they're going to make mistakes and these guys jump on them. And therefore, whatever chance you had of benefiting from that mistake, it's probably gone.
Yeah.
We're also heading to a system, and this has nothing to do with computer wagering. We literally have a system other than bricks and mortars where everyone can bet at the last second. So what is the market? You know, the market used to be people bet 10 minutes to close, 5 minutes to close, then that wave would start break, at post time. But now it's such a tight window. If you're going to be successful in betting, not handicapping, in betting, you better have a good idea of what fair market is. And it's not an overlay. You know, you see a 6-1 and you're pissed that it went down to 4-1. Well, maybe it should have been 4-1 the whole time. Maybe 6-1 was the anomaly.
Right.
And if 4-1 is fair market value, be happy with the 4-1. Because you never were going to get to 6-1. And clearly, in fixed odds, you were never going to get to 6-1. With the way their market traders set up those lines. So I think it's just, the frustration is I bet a horse, gate opens, look up, the odds dropped. Never the odds went up. Because I always point out the races where the odds went up on or whatever. And, that doesn't carry a conversation. But yeah, and there's ways of working with that to make it less intrusive in everyone's betting life. But I mean, even the push to have win pools closed 2 minutes to post,
yeah,
that's not necessarily true. And most places, they're taking bets up to post time if the bettor is willing to pay 3% higher host fee. So that really hasn't changed much. You know, what's changed is what NYRA's done with the pick five and
right.
What those things.
Excluding them from the pool.
Yeah. But they recognize that they can't do too much of that.
Well, the two things that come to mind as you say that. Well, first of all, and you talk about the sports betting side, that at least the individual player, their their wagering interest isn't going to be restricted, like it apparently. I keep seeing these stories about, you know, the minute any player has any success, the sports books, start capping them.
Yes.
So at least our players, if they want to bet big, they're not going to be restricted. In fact, they'll be welcomed. So that's one advantage that we've got, potentially as a betting proposition entity. And then there's, as you're referencing, then there's the areas where we can affect change and make things, better. Along those lines, what do you make of this dynamic morning line concept that Emerald is going to employ? We absolutely applaud them for trying to do things. The penny breakage, of course, one positive. But the idea that, they're going to make the morning line fluid, essentially, that's, even a new wrinkle that is designed, for the players that are frustrated, with the late odds changes. And another area where, utilizing the multi-race wager probables and will pays will come into play to help people get a better understanding of where the betting is headed.
Yeah. Yeah, I certainly applaud them doing the penny breakage, doing this. I wish that there was a takeout reduction at a track. I don't know. I can't remember. Maybe 5 years ago. I think it was before COVID.
Well, there was Canterbury.
Yeah, that's probably the one. But what the results were, the only people that seemed to bet more were the high volume players. And that makes sense, because if you understand what they do, the bigger the pool, the more they bet. Now, they're only betting 2-3% of the pool. But if it's a bigger pool, that 2-3% is a bigger dollar value. So they bet more. But my problem, Steve, when I hear people, the people that have checked out are not checking back in. It's just not going to happen. And that's unfortunate, but I always, when being in racetrack management for a little bit, my thing is you got to go by what customers do, not by what customers say. So if you cut takeout, everyone says we're going to bet more. Well, you bet a little bit more, but not to make up the drop in revenue that the takeout forced. And just things like that. So I think the deal is to get new customers, to get new generations of people to join the game, because it's probably perfectly natural in a negative sum game, where the negative can be as high as a blended 20%. You're going to be losing customers no matter what the reason. And yes, they tend to be vocal, and yes, some successful players are not happy, and that's unfortunate, because those are people really hard to lose and replace. But I don't know. I get confused reading this stuff, because it then blurs into rebates, and then rebates are bad. Rebates, there's $1 million players that are not computer players that are getting significant rebates, and well, they should. And then, no, it's the rebate problem, and it's this and it's that. And it's like, you're just intent on killing the game. You can have no game left.
No, that's
rebates work. Rebates work because the money rebated is bet back into the pool.
Exactly.
If it weren't, it wouldn't work. But it is. And does that give someone an unfair advantage? And like I always say, go to Wynn Las Vegas, check in, tell them you want the presidential suite. They might ask you a couple of questions about how much do you plan on betting and what kind of line of credit would you want. Well, you know, just if you want the big rebates, you got to bet a lot of money. I don't get rebates. I don't bet a lot of money. I don't bet anyone near what you would need to get those rebates. But for the people that get them, I think that's where the issue gets confused. And, you know, then it becomes like, what about us? You know, what about the rebates? What about, you know, this guy made money. He didn't lose 4%. He won 5%. So why should he get a rebate? All
right. Well, and as Jerry, you know, Jerry Brown, to his credit, and Thurgraph with the player services concept. I mean, Jerry, Jerry has beaten the drum that no matter what size player you are, there's rebating of some kind available. Whether it's free PPs, whether it's value added reports, but it every player. That thinks to themselves, you know, I'm betting a fair amount. I'm betting more than, you know, my buddies bet. Ask your ADW and you know, whoever you're betting with, ask them, you know, what is available to me, because you may be surprised. You may think I'm not big enough to, you know, to warrant a rebate. You are. There's something laying in wait for you, no matter what size you are, whether it's free reports, something nice when you come visit a racetrack. There's customer service. You know, the ADWs have customer service reps. We don't actually talk about this enough. That are at each of the tracks, and they'll, you know, they'll get you something, get you set up for, you know, a nice day if you're going to be, you know, you're going to be at Oaklawn or at, at Gulfstream this weekend or here, you know. Obviously, Tom Quigley, I mean, Santa Anita was one of the first to sort of publicize a player concierge. I mean, there's, we should really actually, really should bring a, you know what, that's something, there's always something that pops up that is worth following, and that, This is one of them. So,
well, Naira Betts has those boots at Saratoga. And
yep.
They're staffed, and they have computer connections. You know, so you can sign up there and do this. I think the only thing you can't do is you can't get the card there. If you're brand new, but you have a question or anything, they're more than happy to help you, and they're very helpful. So that's perfect. I mean, that's how you get people to be comfortable and participate at a high level. Yeah, that's I don't know. How about Nick and Lisa? Did you listen to that?
I have not yet.
All right. Well, where it was it I don't know. I didn't take it as a kind of a serious interview, but Nick got into this thing about the states that have not joined HISA, and mainly Louisiana, and they're trying to imply that, and he called it a ghetto. So he described the states that haven't joined HISA and the safety standards and everything else as a ghetto, and everyone else is living this way, and the horsemen seem to think, well, they know better than you. And I'm like, well, I wouldn't use the word ghetto, because I've been to Louisiana tracks, and they're fine. Fairgrounds main track is as safe as any main track in America. And so to describe like you're running over broken bottles and, you know, bush tracks or anything else was really out of line on Nick's part. I don't know what point he was really trying to drive home. And so he got into that and opened it up and kind of was disparaging to the local horsemen that, well, you don't want to join HISA because you think you know better. Well, based on the recent past performances, that debate is still up in the air. Who knows better? I mean, Lisa, to her credit, is willing to accept criticism and make changes, but that means maybe you didn't know better when you started out, and it's an evolving process. So it was okay. It was more big picture. What she's doing with Heisa, I still don't agree with the some of the ventures that they've gotten into. I know Jackie mental health is real important, but I call that mission creep. You have a mission, and the mission is outlined in the federal legislation. So that's what you should be concentrating on. And I'm not saying the other stuff is wrong. And if you can help out on those issues, absolutely fine. And be a clearinghouse for information and stuff. But when you fold that into your regulatory authority, I don't know. I kind of recoil against that. It should be done, and it should be done by everyone and not a group that's supposed to be horse racing integrity and safety. The safety statistics are, you know, basically the message was we had a great year except Churchill and Saratoga. Well, but you had Churchill and Saratoga. So it's like they're trying to prove that they're helping with the safety aspects, and I think the jury's out on that one.
Well, and as we've, you know, driven home for years, that there's going to always be clusters, and there's going to be spikes, and, you know, unanticipated spates of incidents. No matter how much goes into it. I mean, you had, didn't you have, was it on Sunday, you had a couple of horses critically injured on the Tapita. There's some realities that need to be accepted. And, you know, trying to, you know, stop trying to pretend that, yeah, you're gonna solve every equation. You're gonna just work tirelessly, and everybody, even before this took effect, everyone has been working tirelessly to minimize incidents and fatalities. And the evidence, way before Heisa came around, the evidence is there. The 10-year, you know, steady decrease in fatalities per 1,000 starts, those numbers speak for themselves. You know, so one of the most offensive elements of this frequently is, well, we're here now. And look what, please, like everybody, you know, like everybody was, you know, sending horses in harm's way on a daily basis, coast to coast. I mean, it's just nonsense. That to me is what is very frequently, you know, rankling.
Yes, I'm rankling. I like that. I was rankled, not from Lisa, from Nick.
Well,
describing Louisiana tracks and the way he did, and Louisiana horsemen the way he did.
No, I had not had a chance with the travel and everything else to sit down and watch, but that's a little disappointing. Especially having just come from New Orleans and. The things are quite good in Louisiana. 6 minutes, 5 minutes now to post. Let's get everybody, Dick. We've got a couple minutes to this 7th at Happy Valley. A quick run through of the pick three. I gave everybody the plays, the numbers earlier. Go ahead.
Okay, race 7, 1,000-meter sprint, down the back stretch, one turn. Beauty Waves is a big favorite. He won 3 straight barrier trials by wide margins. In fast time, I think one of them went 109 and change on the all-weather track. He draws well. He gets Zach. Nothing not to like other than the price. And I threw in Harmony Fire from post 12, but he has Ellis Wong. And there's a weird statistical aberration in these circumstances, with the rail where it is, 3 out of 8 horses have won from post 12. Usually post 12, big no-no. And he gets in with Ellis Wong, and he has speed. He won last start, gate to wire. So Ellis is back, 115 pounds. I give him a shot. So 6 and 7 in this race. Next race was pretty wide open. I like the 2, Turbion Prince, probably the one to catch from post 3. And then number 10, Show Respect for Harry Bentley. And number 12, Zoom Boom, will be flying at the end, see if he can get there in time. And the last leg, we go to a 6 furlong sprint. I like the 3, Olina, just solid, hard knock. It doesn't win as much as I'd like, but he'll be in it. Number 4, Beauty Infinity for John Seitz and Zach Purton. Just coming into the race in really good form, just nothing not to like. And the favorite's probably going to be number 11, Captain Wynn, for Karis Teton and Pierre Ng. Was second his last 2 starts, beats virtually the same group, drops a pound off those efforts, so he'll be tough. So 6-7 with 2-10-12 with 3-4-11. Problem is this horse, you know, just the first leg is probably going to set off an odds-on horse. That'll affect the other races, but
that's all right. That'll happen.
Take what they give us.
Exactly. Exactly. All right. So we got 2 minutes. Let me pull up video and watch them wander. There we go. And I do want to get 2 things after the race, too, Dick. Obviously, we'll talk about the Hong Kong Derby and Massive Sovereign. You know, who jumped in at the quarter pole to some degree. And then I also wouldn't mind if you gave everybody a little advanced primer on, you know, your thoughts heading toward the World Cup on Saturday morning as well. Actually, what do we got? We got, do you have time to talk the Derby result before this race?
The Derby was just sensational.
Yeah.
And the storylines were amazing. The winner, Massive Sovereign, which we talked about last week.
Yep.
And I said he might get bet, and he was. He was the favorite until a couple hours before the race. The money went to Helios Express. So he went off 4.4 to 1. He's far back with Zach. Fast-paced, Kaiying Generation had opened up this big, clear lead. And I was like, oh, gee, this horse might hold on, especially... what had happened, Steve, was that the track was good to firm. We haven't had a good to firm track in Sha Tin in a long time. So the running times were very fast. Speed did well. It looked like Kaiying Generation might steal it. Here comes Massive Sovereign, and behind them, who probably ran the best race of them all, Galaxy Patch, the other runner for Pierre Ng, breaking from post 14. He misses by a nose. And after this race, I'll get to, I've never seen a horse train up to a mile and a quarter race the way Pierre did with Galaxy Patch. It was just fascinating. And I mentioned last week, Conquistador Cielo winning at a mile on Monday, winning a mile and a half on Saturday. Well, this was kind of similar.
Heading into the gate, let's... bring this up a little.
California Touch Mar Comet Atomic Force.
There we go.
So we come up with the favorite, Beauty Waves. There's all the rage here from the new stable of Pierre Ung and Zach Purton riding it.
Beauty Waves, 3 to 5. Ready for a start.
Favorite drawn barrier 5. One getting up at about 7 or 8. Bit of movement towards the inside as well. Again, movement from barrier 7 or 8. Might be California Touch there away. He missed it as well, California Touch. Great state back in the early stages as well. Harmony Fire and Youthful Spirits away fast. Happy United tracked along and Transit by Beauty Waves, the favorite. Cockpit, and then came Atomic Force, who's wider from Flying High, Heroic Master, California Touch Mark, Comet's very wide on the track, and then came Active Faith, Atomic Energy, he's wider, and two lengths to Great State last. Off the back they run, 5:50 left to go. The leader is Harmony Fire, with Youthful Spirits up on the outside. The favourite right behind them, that is Beauty Waves. He might just be a little keen coming inside the 400 metres. Happy United back over on the inside. Atomic Force came next. Heroic Master Mark competitors. Harmony Fire with a good kick, but coming out and after him is his favorite Beauty Waves. He's a length and a half away. He's closing hard. This 1.6 favorite, he's gone to the top, and Beauty Waves coasts home for the victory over Harmony Fire second.
Well, Dick, that was a very clever setup that you to start the pick three to, you know, to keep Harmony Fire under consideration, because it wouldn't have taken much more for him to steal it.
He did everything right. Had to be used pretty hard down the backside, but you know that from post 12 against other fast horses. And Wong got him on the lead, got him over, and then got him to relax. And 200 meters to go, I thought he might hang on here.
Yeah.
And he took a lot of money, because this morning he was 17-1 when I wrote down odds around 8 o'clock. So Harmony Fire got bet. Obviously, Beauty Waves got bet. Those were the two live horses, and they ran 1-2. But, you know, you had to throw the 7 in just in case.
No, smart. And that, you know, that for pace players, that's one of the things you do. In fact, this weekend at – particularly at Fairgrounds, you know, I was plenty cognizant of that, and you know, I included some horses that I thought, you know, could wire. You actually, we had the one, the one of actually Shane Wilson's that wired the turf, almost wired the turf race. But you know, when you take that temporary rail down, you got that fresh ground. Yes. You know, that's an MO for horses to wire. So no, the good job. Take the 3-5. And for those of you that punched, probably some of you probably singled the 6. So now 2, 10, 12, 3, 4, 11 in the 8th and the 9th. So there's the Hakwan handicap, the 7th from the Valley Where It's Happy, and back to recapping from Saturday, the Hong Kong Derby, and then I want to talk about the weekend, but also talk about the World Cup, too.
So, Galaxy Patch started out his career. He won his first 4 turf races at Sha Tin. Moved up the rankings. Legitimate horse, going short. Then, on March 3rd, Pierre runs him in a 1,000-meter sprint at Sha Tin. Now, all he's concerned about is getting the horse to relax. Over here, we try to build stamina, so we go from 8 furlongs to 9 furlongs to 10 furlongs on the first Saturday in May. Over there, what Pierre Ng did was relax him. So he runs a 1,000-meter sprint. He's beaten 2.5 lengths. Then he comes back a week later against California Spangle and the Queen's Silver Jubilee, Group 1 going 7 furlongs, and he flies home for second. Looked great, and that showed that he's learning his lessons. So he gets thrown into the 1.25 Hong Kong Derby from post 14. He had to steady a little bit in the stretch. If you watch the replay again, Zach had made the move. Zach split horses. He's taken dead aim on Kai Ying Generation. And then Blake Shen had to, like, just get off heels of the winner and then was flying at the wire. I mean, it was just sensational. So now you got Massive Sovereign, 2-for-2 in Hong Kong. Who knows how good he is? I mean, he looks spectacular, relaxes. He's only been there a short period. He raced in Ireland in September, and he's already learning his lessons. And Galaxy Patch could run it any distance and be a factor. Kai Ying Generation was tremendous on the lead, and he broke 2 minutes for the 1.25. And one horse I mentioned was the well-bred Unbelievable, who's the Justify, who's the foal of the City of Troy. he wound up fifth after a bad start, and he went off at 58-1. Well, you're not going to get 58-1 on him ever again. Hmm. And I think he'll be able to compete against the big horses over there. So going into this year's Derby series, I thought it was pretty weak. I thought Helios Express was good, but nothing to get too excited about. And now it's like the race is over. It's like, man, there's a bunch of horses that are going to do great. So that was just fantastic. Zach gets his second Derby winner. He's run second a bunch of times. So kind of been a race of frustration for him. And he only got the mount through just a series of crazy jockey assignments where he suddenly was back aboard Massive Sovereign. So it all worked out for him. And it was a great race. And the storylines among the top horses was great. So you get really good horses that are developing. Because I remember over there, 4 years old, that's pretty young because they're going to run at 5 and 6.
Right.
We've seen the money that the good horse can earn. I mean, $10 million U.S. is not out of the question. So that'll be fun to watch these guys and when they show up again and how many good races they're going to fill.
The Hong Kong Derby. And, Dick, quick look at I got to get off at 10 to get Sid in. He's got a tight schedule, but coming up this weekend, the quick Hong Kong and your thoughts about the World Cup night.
I like Ushba Tercero back in the World Cup. I think the mile and a quarter favors him. He's a stout horse. He runs cold, meaning that he doesn't get excited early and then he finishes strong, as does Senior Buscador. But I think Ushba has the win over the track, and track can be kind of deep and tiring where they might go like 204. Put a mile and a quarter, so it's a real test of stamina, and I think he passes the test better than anyone in the race. I was reading a story this morning by Tony Cruz about California Spangle running in the Alcaraz Sprint, 6 furlongs straightaway on the turf, and he was saying you really need a 7-furlong horse in the 6-furlong race, because that once again it becomes a test of stamina, not going around a turn where horses can get strung out. And thinking that if he's right, well, that would mean Casa Creed has a big shot, because he's a kind of a 7-furlong sprinter. He's running great in Saudi at 6.5 furlongs. So 6 furlongs at Alcaraz should be right up his alley. Bunch of Hong Kong horses are entered. Obviously, the Brits, Gosden has a bunch for them. The Japanese are loaded in all the races. August Rodin and Luxembourg. I mean, the Irish have really welcomed these races the last 5 to 7 years, and they're sending their best horses, even though it means you give August Rodin maybe an early start to a season. But Aiden will run Ascot and then maybe take the summer off and get him back for the ball. I mean, just Aiden knows what he's doing.
Yeah, he's got a couple.
To see them show up and the numbers and quality that they're showing up in is great. And then that UAE Derby, there's another Japanese horse in there besides the Forever Young, and that has implications, because if you're first or second, you're probably going to make the Kentucky Derby. And so I'm really looking forward to it. When I was involved, it's more work, and then you just kind of enjoy it. But this one, I'm looking forward to it, and really Saturday morning, I'll be glued to the TV.
Always makes for an interesting and long day, starting with the World Cup activity, and then, you know, basically rolling right into the Gulfstream Florida Derby card and Oaklawn as well. So,
no, it's going to be. Going to be a long day, and you got Shot 10 at night.
And next
week, Steve, we'll be at Shot 10 next Wednesday.
Nice.
So we won't be at Happy Valley next Wednesday. And I assume the races will be on the all weather. So
yeah,
we'll be sticking to Shot 10 for this weekend, next Wednesday, Halloween weekend, which will then have a couple of major stake races, Chairman's Trophy, and there's a my race, I think. So big race is still out there.
They're, what are they drawing? Are they drawing now?
With the time zone difference, yes, that they probably are. But I know they used to draw the four big races, or the last three anyway, separately in a ceremony. So I'm not sure what the timing is on that. But that sometime today, the races will be drawn. And the good thing with these races, you know who's going to enter. The horses have shipped already, and there's no strangers showing up or anything like that. So just a matter of where they draw and how it feels.
Well, especially because there's a few fields that'll be quite full. Plenty of North American interest to keep track of, and we'll discuss it. I haven't seen who's headed over from the broadcast side. You mentioned Nick. He's usually part of it. And Michelle, you frequently, right? And see what...
I don't know. I assume we'll just be watching it on ADW streams. I don't know if there's any national coverage like Saudis do with Fox and stuff. Not that I'm aware of.
And Hazleton too, right? Hazleton usually is over there. That's one of his frequent gigs.
Yeah.
I will find out. I will get. I haven't seen. I don't see the press releases like we use. Well, between you and Pat over the years, you know, when we first started covering it, we used to get a lot more, detail from them. So now I got to go look for it, essentially. Dick, this was fabulous, and good luck the rest of the way here in this pick three. Hopefully, these Wednesdays have become, handicapping fun and central between you and Caitlin and Seth Merrow. So thank you.
I'm still excited over the Derby. That was so good. And if you haven't seen it, find a replay on YouTube.
Yeah, it's all over. It's easy to. I woke up to it myself as it happens on Sunday morning. And of course, speaking of the handicapping on Wednesdays, tremendous job on that nightcap last week, which featured, a bonanza for those that, there's quite a few players that hook up all the assorted. I appreciate it. A lot of players that'll take your numbers and box them up and key things. So well done.
Well, I'm the first to complain when results aren't what I thought they would be. Those results were $550 try.
Yep. Yeah.
Those three, $2 box, and then $90-something exact. And it's just nuts. I can't explain that. Usually when that happens, there's some heavy favorite that ran out of the money. It happened, and I still don't know why, but yeah, we don't question why. We just can't.
Exactly. We just spend the money. Dick Powell, everybody. HKJC Racing. Thanks, Dick. That was fun and plenty informative. Let's get Sid in here. He's got a tight morning. I've already set up part of his conversation, and usually we're focused on the three-year-old boys, but Francis Caron's piece yesterday focusing on the filly and the rather great story for Eric Foster. And, we first became aware of Eric with the win at, 2 years ago, maybe more now, at Kentucky Downs. But this will be a real showcase for him running Everland in the Kentucky Oaks. Sid, good morning.
Good morning, Steve.
It was so funny that Francis, that you guys put that Substack story up, because I had touched on it yesterday because I had Michael McCarthy here, and we were talking.
We're talking
about the Ammermans, and we were talking, about Oscar performance, and I had tweeted Sunday morning it's kind of a wild story the way Oscar performance has just exploded on the scene.
Yeah, really amazing.
Then those families, the female families that are involved, there were so many interconnected. It was crazy how many, you know, between George Strawbridge and Millridge and the Ammermans and Jonathan Thomas. And it was just the craziest set of, you know, it was like a confluence of events.
And don't forget the Kitten's Joys, too, because it wasn't just the Oscar performance.
Yep.
You know, the other one, too, and several good winners, main winners. Yeah, it was really funny how everything kind of just was just a few degrees of separation from the other.
Well, and you know, this is actually 2 weeks in a row. There was the Judmont. I'm trying to think of who the other one was that I'm going to draw a blank. But for a filly like this to be dangled, essentially, because this filly, no matter what, had residual value with that female family.
Yeah, and wow, what a family.
Right?
I mean, there were 8 claims in for her.
Yep.
You know, I mean, that tells you that, right?
Exactly. You know, even if you, you know, just get an ordinary filly, I mean, there's going to be people. I mean, you could cover her and you know, put her in a sale, and she's going to, you know.
Or you could have one of the few arrogates.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. Yeah. That was the other part of it, being an arrogate.
Yeah. Pretty wild.
Yeah. Interesting. All right.
How's your week been?
Well, I got here to Santa Anita.
Right.
What's today? Wednesday. So I got here Monday night. Had it's tough to not have a good time in New Orleans. But the, you know, there's something a little different about being there. That's my second, I think, Louisiana Derby weekend, and it is different coming there for closing week than when I usually go, which is Risen Star, and.
Right.
You know, it's a very distinct meet that they have at Fairgrounds. You know, with the rousing opening. You know, traditionally Thanksgiving opening, and you know, then the big, you know, the series of big Saturdays. Everything kind of focuses on that. But they had a spectacular season, and you know, I know that, you know, Churchill takes plenty of broadsides. They deserve some credit, and the team down there particularly deserves credit for always coming back. I mean, you know, you go back even to Katrina, and you know, there's been so many calamities in New Orleans over the years, and you know, they had the issue last year with the turf course. They fixed it. And they were rewarded this year. I mean, the racing was very good, and the meet picked up momentum as it went.
Oh, that's great. Yeah. That's great to hear.
What did you, let's talk about that winner and some thoughts, because this is obviously a horse that, you know, you Catching Freedom, you've got plenty of association, with Dennis Albaugh, and boy, they were just tickled.
Yeah, but first, what I'd like to say is the Jason Luch, who is the manager, really, of his father-in-law's stable. I mean, he's absolutely incredible. He and his team and what they do, because I mean, think about it. Every year, they seem to come up with classic hopefuls, right?
Yeah,
and they don't buy that many horses. Which is what's really amazing about it. You know, last year was Angel of Empire from a book five, $70,000. This year, it's a $575,000 Constitution from book one. And, you know, all the credit to Jason and stuff, because, you know, we give our lists every year, but it's up to him and his team to winnow it down. You know, it's not like when we're doing mares for them or maidens. I mean, you go into a sale you're up against everybody else, and you're only buying what 8 to 10 yearlings a year. I think it's an absolutely phenomenal job that they've done. You know, for so long, you know, year after year, they want to win the Derby, and they get, you know, horses of that type. And what's really interesting about this horse, and I'm sure you saw that Brad Cox video where he was talking about him, but he said he's sort of like Angel of Empire in that he's not a big workhorse in the mornings like his other horse, Cox's other horse, Timberlake, is, for example. This horse doesn't show too much in the mornings, but he brings it on game day. And the other thing is, of course, he's got that, you know, come from behind running style as well. And it, those types of horses, especially these days, not too many trainers understand that and kind of train a horse that way. Everybody wants to put horses into races really quickly. That's kind of a training style that, you know, Bob Baffert, that's his signature move. But to be able to, there's kind of an old school methodology to do that. You know, you don't really care too much that the morning works aren't that sparkling, and you put the horse in the race to come from behind, and you know it all came together here. So it's a big thing for everybody concerned with the horse. And I, you know, as a mile and a 3/16, I mean, obviously he gets the distance, right?
Oh, without question.
Yeah.
Without question. And on that topic, I mean, let's talk about particularly an interesting female family. Obviously, Constitution needs no introduction, but this dam, Catch My Drift, she's a Pioneer of the Nile daughter. So Unbridled figures prominently on both sides of this pedigree. You know, Unbridled being the sire of Tap Your Heels, Tap Its Dam. So, you know, 4x4 to Unbridled. There's an interesting name for me, Sid, in the female family. That's the second dam, Drift to the Lead, who was by Yana Guska. So if there's a goosing of speed it in this horse, that turn of foot, some of it could be coming from, you know, from there, because you know, certainly, you know, the Yana Guska, son of Cherokee Run. But then you go back to the female family, Drifa, a daughter of Tabasco Cat, and her dam, Sigrun, a daughter of Crafty Prospector. So there's, you know, there's infusions of speed in here. There's, you know, there's obviously plenty of classic stamina when you look at, you know, Catch My Drift's top line, Pioneer of the Nile, Empire Maker, Unbridled. You know, this is a serious 10 furlong and beyond horse.
He certainly showed it, that he wants that distance in the way he runs. Of course, you know, people always talk about traffic problems in the Derby and all that. But, you know, this horse does what he does. And, you know, he's shown that. You know, he gets the distance. He's, you know, by a really good stallion, Constitution, obviously. He's, so far, the best son of Tappet and Stud. And, I mean, everything looks pretty good for him. The dam, by the way, to note, she has two stakes place runners, one by Into Mischief Strava, and the other by Uncle Mo, Bishop's Bay, who was very highly, you know, thought of horse at one point.
Brad Cox trained.
Right. So, you know, if you remember, he ended up, I think he was second in the one of the derbies last year. You know, regional derby.
Yeah.
And he placed in the Peter Pan as well. Ohio Derby.
There you go.
And he placed in the Peter Pan as well. So he, you know, he was the dam's a stakes winner. She's now produced three stakes horses. I mean, it's, you know, you're getting a lot of input from the dam as well as the sire. And like I said, I really appreciate, you know, a trainer that can, that's not afraid to let a horse come from off the pace. And that's how this horse wants to run.
Well, and you mentioned the dam. Catch My Drift. People will remember Chad Brown training for Hidden Brook. This is a Hertrick and Fielding bred product. And she finished her career with a grade one placement in the Beldame. Her stake win was in the Summer Colony at Saratoga in 2015. She also was second in the Turn Back the Alarm. Going back to that Yanaguska mare, Drift to the Lead, Mike Trombetta trained. And this one for Vinery, as it happens. And also a kind of a stakes nibbler, tried stakes at the end of her career. Took a while to break her maiden, but she was a four-time winner and, you know, a solid earner of $120,000. And before that, the Tabasco Cat mare, Drifa, this one I was a Pin Oak product. Interesting. And came out of Oklahoma, came out of Remington and broke the maiden, was just a one-time winner. Just, you know, kind of drifting through this, through the pedigrees, Crafty Prospector, then a Baldski mare. Interesting. This is funny because I don't see, this is a little different than a lot of the storylines, Sid, that we seem to hit, which is, you know, usually these classic prospects we find, we dig in those female families and we find big names, you know, we find, you know, some of the great, you know, historic breeders. This one feels a little bit more, you know, kind of random. Here's a Florida bred April Dawn Marie, the Baldski mare. A little bit of a different female family for Catching Freedom.
Yeah. That's right.
Well, they're in nice shape, obviously. And you mentioned, Sid, you mentioned Timberlake. Brad Cox, not limited either to just to Timberlake yet this weekend. Next week, he's going to come back with Just a Touch. We discussed with him yesterday or Monday. And he's also got Encino, Encino as well, that's going to try the bluegrass. So
Nyquist, yeah,
he's in good
as
stead.
As usual, he's got a lot of horses.
Yeah, to say the least. What you got some thoughts about the two preps this weekend? Did you look these fields over?
You know, I've just seen some of the big names. I haven't really looked into it, but I did want to mention endlessly the Oscar Performance Horse. What's interesting here is that Oscar Performance has another stakes. The Dam by Langfuhr is a half sister to a Quality Road filly called Postscript, who's also produced an Oscar Performance stakes winner. Act the Fool on the Halter and Derby. And another half-sister, Miss Shapen, produced the grade one winner Coffee Click by Medaglia d'Oro. So that's the same sire line, the Kitten's Joy sire line. So in this particular case, you can see this family has really these three half-sisters. You have three half-sisters here who've all produce stakes winners now by Kitten's Joy. I mean, not Kitten's Joy, but El Prado line stallions. Act the Fool, Coffee Click by Medaglia d'Oro, and now Endlessly by Oscar Performance again. So, you know, that's sometimes breeders, when they see a family or the half-sister is kind of working with a certain sire line, they tend to revisit that sire line. And in this particular case, you can see it's been quite successful.
Just pulled it up, and that second dam, the Dam of Dream Forever, Society Dream, a French mare that sort of is a interesting. This was the one I brought up yesterday with Michael, Jean-Luc Lagardère.
Mm-hmm.
Bred, and Akarad, the sire, complete. I couldn't tell you anything. What is there any?
He was a horse that was bred by Marcel Boussac at the very end of Boussac's career, and the Aga Khan purchased all Boussac horses. He came with it. And the Aga Khan actually raced him. And then he stood at stud. So it is a kind of an anomaly that you don't see, certainly in this country. And that's a really interesting part of it. And of course, you see the third dam is by Blushing Groom. So you have, a lot of Aga Khan influence in there, too. Jean-Luc Lagardère. Interestingly, his horses were also, when he died, his horses were also purchased by the Aga Khan. It's certainly a interesting pedigree for, you can see why they want to stay on turf with this horse, because it's a big turf influence as well, isn't it?
Well, and one thing that's really notable, Sid, I mean, this is completely, Akarad was completely a European product. There is not one American influence in the five generations on the page at all. I mean, going back to the teens, going back to 1912, 1913. I'm looking, here's Blenheim and Court Marshal in the 40s. Well, Phalaris, there's obviously names that are prominent in North American lines, but Blandford and Hyperion and Pharos and Tourbillon, this is completely a European page. I mean, which is unusual in itself. I mean, usually there's an American mare or something that shows up in these pedigrees, but this is a very pure French and English pedigree.
And like I said, it's all it's a big Marcel Boussac. Marcel Boussac was one of those rare breeders that he bred his own mares to his own stallions, and if you look at the pedigree of Akarad, isn't his broodmare sire Abdos?
Yes.
Yeah, Abdos, another Boussac stallion. So he's got a mare from his own stallion that he breeds back. And this was at the end of Marcel Boussac's career, by the way. His textile empire was faltering. His horses were completely non-commercial, just his own lines. He wasn't having much success. And the irony is that after he died and his estate sold these horses to the Aga Khan, the Aga Khan immediately had a boon, because one of those horses, Akita, won the Ark, for the Aga Khan again, from the same family, the same thing. And then, of course, Akarad was, you know, a big winner for him as well. And the Aga Khan took those families, and if you look at one of the top Aga Khan runners, just pull him up, Darshan, who's obviously a terrific Broodmare sire as well. You'll notice that Darshan's Broodmare sire is also Abdos, if I'm not mistaken. Dam, I think, was Kelsey by Abdos. That was yet another benefit that the Aga Khan got after he got the Boussac horses, because Darshan, the French Derby winner, tremendous sire, had become an incredible Broodmare sire, and an extremely influential one too. So, you know, empires come to an end, and then somebody takes the remnants of it, and they're able to reignite some of the stuff by just switching some stuff around, moving to some stallions that are more potent, say, and reignites families that somebody had sort of cultivated for years and had sort of gone dormant. And this is a great tale about that.
Exactly, and you love you know, hitting on those. I mean, the introduction, you know, sometimes the introduction of a fresh family, you know, the something, you know, turns on the switch, as John Sakura explained.
Yeah, turns the light switch on.
Yeah.
John's great expression.
And I'm just looking at that Licata. Yeah, she got a Camus, who won the Le Pin and the Prix de Jockey Club. The Akarad, as mentioned, won the Saint Cloud, and Akiata, who won the Arc. So this is, it's fun. That's, you know, this is why you dig into these. It makes for, you know, fascinating. This is what draws people to the breeding side.
People forget also, like, the third dam here is by Blushing Groom, right?
Yeah.
And here's another interesting fact about the Blushing Groom was, of course, the Blushing Groom is from a big Aga Khan family. But here's the funny thing. The Aga Khan sold the dam of Blushing Groom while she was in foal. And the guy that bought the dam is the breeder of Blushing Groom, not the Aga Khan. And Blushing Groom was then put into a auction, and the Aga Khan came back and bought Blushing Groom out of the auction from a cult that he had sold.
Interesting.
Yeah. So, you know, it's so funny how something could, in his case, you could say, quote unquote, he corrected his mistake by getting that horse, by getting Blushing Groom back. If you look at Blushing Groom, you'll see that he was not bred by the Aga Khan. I think it was
John Sullivan.
John Sullivan. Yeah.
Yep. John McNamee.
Yeah.
Sullivan. Yep.
Yeah. And it was the Aga Khan that came and purchased him. And of course, Blushing Groom was a huge, huge horse for the Aga Khan. And the Aga Khan then sold him to the United States, where he came and went to stud at Gainesway and became just an outstanding stallion, outstanding influence. But, you know, fate plays a big role.
As it does so often. There's fate, and then there's crazy mishaps or you know, odd confluences. My favorite story on that front, the Jeremans with Summer Bird. how the dam the dam went in for knee surgery and they operated on the wrong knee, and and the Jeremy said, "All right, forget it. They were going to keep her in training, and they ended up retiring her, and then they took this involves Gainesway, right? They took the dam was supposed to get covered. I forget who was supposed to cover her, and Gainesway offered up Birdstone, and the next thing you know, you have Summer Bird. All the planning in the world can't make that happen.
Yeah, that's something.
Oh, that's why we love it. It's a lot of planning, and it's a lot of happenstance, and a little bit of dash of luck. Well, Sid, we're gonna have we'll certainly have a fun conversation next Wednesday. We'll see if some of the familiar parties like Timberlake and Fierceness and Hades and Mystic
it's gonna
Dan.
Be a good week. Yeah, it's gonna be a good bunch of racing.
Well, and I'm just I put in for Thorograph for tomorrow's conversation with Jeff, who may actually come to Santa Anita and do it live. But we're gonna look at the Florida Derby, and we're gonna look at the Fantasy. The Fantasy is pretty fascinating. It feels like the Arkansas Derby's got, you know, four major obvious players. So I picked the Fantasy instead, which seems really well matched. So should be from here on in, right, Sid? I mean, from here till first Saturday, the script writes itself.
That's right. Well put.
Sire Watch Pedigree Focus, brought to you by Hill and Dale. Sid, I'll talk to you. I'll be here next Wednesday. I'll talk to you then.
All right. Look forward to it. Great. Have a great week, Steve.
Thanks, Sid. Sid Fernando, everybody. And I'm going to send you out that Substack, a link. It's a fun. You should be signed up and get it to basically, you know, delivered to your mailbox. And what just happened to my whole? Oh, boy. I'm getting what I sort of deserved here. Yesterday, the computer tells me your disk is almost full. So I very cleverly tried to get rid of unwanted files, and it has somewhat predictable results. There's a few things that are not, they're not functioning like they should. Because I was just going to reach for that Substack, but to give you some of the details, I'll do it separately. All right, we're going to head to a break. When we come back, as promised, Bill Gallo is going to join us. Second half coming up here, Bill Gallo, and we'll talk about the start of the National Steeplechase season, which came at Aiken on Saturday. But the announcement that a new Grade One, and maybe this will help everybody. Makes it easier when it comes to picking out your Eclipse Award-winning chaser, particularly after last year, which was such a difficult decision to make. So adding another high-profile stake to the calendar, certainly welcome. So let's take the break. After Bill Gallo, we'll talk to Mig. We've got Caitlin Free coming, as well as Seth Merrow. We're coming to you now from a sun-drenched Santa Anita Park, the great race place, and absolutely beautiful morning. It's warmed up, and we're just warming up for almost 2 weeks of Santa Anita. Back after this at the races, Sirius XM. Stay with us.